In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. We thought it failed. But after WonderCon, it became something more. Our last best hope for more Lost Tales geeking. The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast. And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
And I'm Brad Boyer.
That's right. We have Brad from Pod Culture with us because, once again, Jeffrey is off in studios unknown, putting his shoulder to the grindstone, providing us with more quality entertainment.
Yep. Actually, he told me he's off working with George Johnson on like four projects simultaneously.
Which is even better.
Yes, exactly. So that's a good thing. We're happy for Jeffrey because when Jeffrey's working, then
we're all happy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's a good thing. However, we are going to do tonight's fantastic episode without him, but that's okay.
We'll survive, I hope.
Brad will be an admirable fill-in, I'm sure.
Well, I'm no Gary from Jacksonville, but I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, but who is?
Well, this gives you a chance to probably directly rebut some of, I know like at least four of those have to be from Gary, four of those voicemails. So instead of arguing with him in the chat room, you can actually directly address his comments here.
Oh, no, that's what Twitter's for.
Please, please don't tell me you guys Twitter and talk in IRC at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
I got nothing.
I wouldn't want to have it.
Multi-talented geeking.
Yeah, I know. I'm impressed. I'm just a quaint old timer at that level.
Wow. All right.
Hey, before we get into all this, let's break out the major JMS announcement that was just released last week.
Yes.
According to a number of sources, J. Michael Straczynski has been tapped to write the script for the on-again, off-again proposed remake of Forbidden Planet.
And while normally I would rail against the gods for yet another remake, the fact that it involves JMS and Joel Silver together, I'm willing to let my initial knee-jerk reaction, oh no, not another remake, subside for now until
I don't know,
we have
but
more.
It's a classic.
It is a classic, but it is one that could be remade better. Could, possibly.
Well,
and in the hands of a story crafter who I respect as much as I do JMS, I'm willing to give the entire project the benefit of the doubt until something bad happens.
Yeah.
Because it's Hollywood.
And I'll also offer this. Once I saw that on the net, we had Gary from Jacksonville sent us a link about it, and a couple other listeners thoughtfully forwarded on. So I followed some of those links and just kind of doing a quick look-see. This has been an on-again, off-again project since about 2000 or so.
I thought it was earlier than that.
Was it? Maybe I didn't. You read something different than me. But having said that, I know James Cameron was attached to the project at one point. Handful of other people, names I didn't recognize, but it's been one of those that's been kicking around for 10 years or so. So I guess it's prior than 2000. But anyways, so we'll see. You know, I mean, I'm with you, Summer. If anybody would be able to do it justice, it would be JMS. Of course, I'm sure his good script for Silver Surfer apparently has been put on the shelf, so no guarantee this one's going to see the light of day.
I have to wonder if they're just rearranging the production schedule of all the superhero movies. all the comic book movies. I don't know.
All I can say is, Jameis, if you're listening and you want my opinion, I would say that the project that should have your undivided attention right now would be the Lensman script. So.
How did we know you would say that?
Just saying. I'm just saying.
Well, it's no Robo Vampire, but it should be interesting.
Nothing is Robo Vampire. I can't believe you said that on this show. All right. We are going to take a really quick break and come back with the feedback of Palooza-ing.
Do you drool over the latest cutting-edge technology? Are you the first in line for the latest sci-fi movie? Do you stay up late at night playing video games? Do you consider being called a geek a badge of honor? Then Geek Cred is the show for you. Join me, Steve Rickyberg, as I bring you behind-the-scenes interviews to give you the inside scoop on everything geek. From tech to sci-fi to games, you name it, we geek it. Geek Cred. Are you geek enough? To download and subscribe, visit www.geekcred.net and get your geek on.
And we are back to dive into the feedback that you have so carefully thought out for us and so lovingly contributed so that we can continue our, what's the word I'm looking for? Discussions of topics of great, great importance to sci-fi fans who listen to this show and watch Babylon 5.
No, it's pretty much just knee-jerk reactions called in immediately after I've said something that's pissed off somebody else.
Well, I think Gary has it on speed dial on all his phones, doesn't he?
Gary has several of our shows, our lines on speed dial, as can be evidenced sometimes when he calls the wrong one and leaves a message for the wrong show. Those are funny. Anyway, we have our first one.
You know, hi, guys. It's Gary Kemper again. I just, you know, I had a question as I'm thinking about, you know, all the propaganda going on with, you know, Clark on Earth and everything like that and Psycor's involvement. Is everyone from Psycor, like, really, you know, total bastards? You know, we saw that character that Jeffrey Combs played, I think, let's take his name was Harriman. And, you know, he seems sort of sympathetic to people. And I have to think that there are more people like that in Psycor, that, you know, not everyone's, you know, a Bester wannabe or a Bester clone. And so I wonder what sort of impact they had sort of in the Resistance. We never really saw it mentioned, you know, but I have to imagine there were, you know, some people, you know, really, you know, putting themselves out to try and stop Clark. Not everybody imagines, you know, Psycor taking over the, you know, Earth Alliance. Just love to hear your two cents, guys. Take care. Please leave it in, Tim. Please.
Well, I actually have a tidbit. I'm not sure I mentioned it on this show, though. When we interviewed Jeffrey Combs a couple weeks ago, it was, you know, talking about his work on Reanimator and the other horror movies he's made in honor of his induction into the International Horror and Sci-Fi Film Festival Hall of Fame, which was, I guess, the weekend before Halloween. But after the interview, Mike and I talked to him for like another 20 minutes about all sorts of stuff. And one of the things that came up was his role of Harriman Gray on Babylon 5. And he had said that initially, his impression was that Harriman Gray, the character, was supposed to be around for more than one episode. And based on what he described, there's a good possibility that Harriman Gray would have been the attaché person attached to Bester the way, you know, Lanier was with Delenn and Veer was with Londo. Very, very much like that. But he was also shooting a role on Deep Space Nine at the time. So those conflicted, and he could never get back to have, like, a regular schedule with Babylon 5, so they just dropped it.
Right.
And I think that would have been really, really cool to see someone like that as an aide to Bester in a similar kind of role that we grew to maybe not as frequently on the show, of course, like we saw Lanier and Veer, but it still would have been kind of interesting.
It just as a counterpoint, yeah, because I get the sense, I mean, if you just watch the show and just go from what you see on the screen, you basically get two flavors of, well, yeah, well, you get basically three flavors of telepath. One is the Bester, the Korra's mother, the Korra's father, and he's going to fight Clark, but, you know, he has allied only with Sheridan and his people out of expediency, and thinks that ultimately it's the war is going to be between telepaths and mundanes. You also get the telepaths in the Psi Corps who are working with Clark, and then you've got the rogues.
Yeah, and it would have been interesting to see someone who was more, I guess, moderate, someone who understood that there was a middle road that Psi Corps could easily have taken.
Right.
Would have been interesting. And I give that theory credence because Harriman Gray plays a major part in one of the B5 novels that not a whole lot of people read. The one Voices. I mean, literally, the second half of the book is like him and Garibaldi having a buddy cop adventure.
Huh. I never got that far in the book.
I did. But the cool thing was, I actually, you know, Voices is one of the books that I had several extra copies of. So I took one of those copies to the film festival, and when I met up with him later after the screening and the induction, I gave him a copy. he was very excited to have it. I said,
"Oh, good.
Don't expect great things, but hey, your characters,
yeah, right. your
literally, yeah, the, your yeah. characters, the, literally the first one introduced in the book, and he's mentioned on the back cover. So here you go."
Cool.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Nan Benedict in Evansville, Indiana. I was just listening to the latest podcast about moments of transition, and Tim, I believe it was Tim, was talking about Scott Adams and something that he had Dilbert say, and for the last many years, I have had taped to the file cabinet in my office that very thing, and it's a cartoon of Dilbert, and above it is a picture of John and Delenn, and what Dilbert is saying is, Babylon 5, this is the best television show ever made. It's too complicated for the average viewer to understand without reading the Babylon 5 web pages first, and I respect that in a show. Plus, the stars get to have sex with aliens. That really opens up your options. Unfortunately, I'm getting ready to retire in a couple of months, and I don't think I'll be able to get it off the filing cabinet in one piece, but I did want to let you know exactly what it said. Scott Adams was a fan of the show, as are we all. So, thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks for that, man. You'll have to take a photo of your filing cabinet and send it in.
Which means we need somebody to find which Dilbert collection that strip is in and let us know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Babylon guys, Bengal. It's Gary from Jacksonville. How's everybody doing tonight? You know, Summer, you know, with the news of the latest Babylon 5 collectible, I'm surprised you have, I know we've talked about it, but you haven't posted listings for it on eBay yet. I started to realize the reason you're posting is so that I'll buy them and hence make your collection more valuable by not having this stuff out available. I can understand that, and I don't have a problem with it. So could you do me a favor? Could you please put up the listings on eBay for the people selling this now collectible Zima stuff? I'd really appreciate it. You know, the bottles, the signs, stuff like that. I need more, you know, Zima, you know, eBay listings so I can go right to them so I don't have to do the searching myself. Thanks, Summer. Bye-bye.
Contrary to popular belief, Gary, I am not doing this to increase the value of anyone's collection, just letting people know who might not have copies of certain things that, hey, they're available on eBay for the next week if you hurry quickly and maybe try to outbid you. Because right now I'm mostly finding stuff that I already have, but I know that in the past people have asked for. Like Peter Warlord found a copy of that the Babylon 5 station micro machine, the one that works by itself. I had never even seen that until Brad found one in a clearance toy bin for $2.99 with JMS's signature on it. Dude, score of the decade there.
Yeah.
It's the local comic shop. So.
Yeah, but yeah, so finding one of those, he kept his eye out and just said, hey, one's up on eBay now. So I went and bid on it. I missed the first one, but I got the second one. And then it dawned on me that there are other people out there who want to know these things. So I just, every now and then I find something cool, I just put it in the Babylon 5 eBay finds thread over at farpointforums.com. And what is it? A couple of the books that I didn't know existed, like the Crusade Guide and some other, I can't remember the title of it now, but there was an essay collection that was printed in the UK a while back that I never knew existed. And actually, Babylon Lurker, Jan is sending me one of those. So, yay! My Babylon 5 collection grows. I'm going to need a new shelf.
Searching on eBay can be both interesting and expensive.
Dangerous is the word I would use.
Hey, Ken, Summer, Jeffrey, and everybody else, this is Joe in Anaheim. I just got finished listening to show 133, the League of Non-Aligned Knitters or whatever. Oh, my gosh, my head still hurts. I just had to call and tell you guys, that was a great show. My head hurts. It was so funny with all the puns, but it was a great show. Anyways, I will talk to you guys soon. Gary, you were fantastic on it, by the way. Love you guys. Bye.
Well, thanks for that. Yeah, that was a fun show. Really, really enjoyed that.
The League of Non-Aligned Knitters. I understand, because I cracked up the first time I heard it. They hadn't prepared me for that. That was busted out right there on the show for the first time, and golf clap, ladies, golf clap.
Yes, yes.
That one was a hoot.
Yeah. They were funny and entertaining and passionate fans, and it's just neat to see how these things come together. I would never have thought.
And the fact that we still have new fans coming to the show through other channels of interest, that warms my heart.
Yeah.
It does. Because that means our show will be in reruns forever.
But yeah, knitting, that's so. Just such an odd thing to come to Babylon 5 too.
You're right.
It's whatever geeks fancy. Because I would never have put sci-fi and knitting together until I saw the explosion of Jane hats.
Oh, at Dragon Con, there was somebody that had a Jane's hat costume.
What?
That was a giant Jane's hat, swear to God.
Was their costume?
Yes.
Okay, I need to see a picture of that. That's just awesome.
That's frightening to think about.
Oh, it was hilarious.
That's a lot of yarn, man.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie. I'm listening to the Phantompalooza from about a month ago. Anyway, you were mentioning about Firefly music, and I don't know if you know it, but earlier this year, a CD, I bought it this year, a CD of Firefly music from the show. I found it and listened to it, and it was quite enjoyable, so it was, you know, a late arrival for fans of Firefly. That's all.
Yep. I think, what was it, the Firefly soundtrack came out this year or last year, and then the Serenity soundtrack had come out right around the same time as the movie. Is that right, Brad?
I think so, yeah.
Cool.
There's all kinds of Firefly music out there, even CD-wise. Dundee Impossible has a soundtrack that's fantastic.
Huh. I didn't know they had a soundtrack. Everybody's got a soundtrack. We need more Babylon 5 soundtracks. What do you think?
I agree.
Need more Babylon 5 filk.
Yes, yes. Well, you know what? I think we need to work on Mr. Tom Smith if he's feeling better. And I hope that the great Luke Ski will follow up on his own very high bar that he set with Mr. Londo and some of the song titles in there.
Well, I follow Tom on LiveJournal, and he's doing quite a bit better and making some new music. So.
That's good.
Great.
That's excellent. It would take a stroke of inspired genius to outdo I'm Mr. Londo. Oh, my goodness. I don't think that had me laughing for a very long time.
Hey, guys. This is Rod from Nashville calling once again. Just calling to say loving the podcast, and I'm about an episode or maybe now two behind, but just listened today to the Deep Geeking on Rumors, Bargains, and Lies, and love the episode. I love rewatching these as we go through with the various podcasts. It's fantastic to do this. And it was great to hear you two hit on what I consider to be the two problem points in the episode, which is the very, very beginning and the very, very end. Opens weekly, closes weekly. And the opening is the kind of weak humor bit of having Sheridan laughing all to himself over there in the corner because it just looks stupid and plays poorly. It's a reoccurrence of the same problem that Straczynski had a whole lot of the time in Babylon 5. It reoccurs over and over again, which is very stupid, broad humor that is not at all witty, and it's just kind of silly at the time, and in retrospect, it's even worse. But it gets past it by with the rest of the scene where I agree with you. It does look as if his banging on the table did surprise the other actors and really kind of added something to the scene. It was quite well done. And then there's the scene at the end with the very sick Lanier, who's had part of a lung removed, getting up out of the bed to follow someone down the hall. Follow him down the hall and then go and report to Berlin what he's seen. That should have been rewritten, not necessarily in the way you guys were talking about, but quite simply just by having it be another Mimbari who sees Nerun leaving and goes and talks to the wind. Would have accomplished the same exact thing. It wouldn't have had me sitting there thinking, how in the hell can he get up out of the freaking bed without his lung missing, and why are we even letting him be awake? He should be drugged out of his mind. But, nevertheless, loving the podcast, and I'm going to try to call in and leave more messages in the future because you guys are really doing a fantastic job. And keep it up.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, that is kind of interesting. If one of the members of the religious caste who had been basically chastised once they realized what Delenn's real plan was, if one of them had seen Nerun leaving and gone to tell her, sort of to try to assuage their own guilt for what they almost did. Huh.
Yeah, I think it would have had a different, had a whole different tone. I would agree right there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We shall have to ponder more.
Yeah, it's interesting though. He also touches on a broader topic of the broad stupid humor.
Mm-hmm.
While I think that there are some excellent uses of humor throughout the show, anything that ends with a Christopher Franke music cue that goes wow wom, you know, it's just the dumb humor.
And we all know that our lives and our universe can be so much more better with silly humor.
Well, yeah. That's why cats are here, to make the universe way of making sure we don't take ourselves too seriously.
There you go.
I thought cats were agents of the shadows.
Nope.
Guys, this is Chris Lester from the Metamore City podcast. Just listening to Summer's theory about Zima being the long-lost zombie repellent. So I guess that would mean that Zima is actually an acronym for Zombie Irritant Malt Alternative. Food for thought. No pun intended. Keep it on the bright side, guys.
I got nothing.
Zombie irritant malt alternative. How about zombie immolation malt alternative? Because that stuff has a high alcohol content.
Well,
I don't know. We'll have to work on that. You know that. Hey, that could be proof of how far technology advances. Like 100 years, 200 years from now, when Zima's back in production, they're going to be, what did Zima stand for? They're going to try to figure out what Z-I-M-A meant. You know, Zima, it's got to be an acronym for something. They used nothing but acronyms back then.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. NASA, FAFSA, Zima.
I can't remember the exact line, but Garibaldi.
Hi there. I just was listening to 134, and you guys were talking about Scott Adams on B5. And yes, it was his girlfriend that was in the Glen Bowery. Actually, I think he put it down, put her, listed her as his partner. That was because I guess it was Golden. He showed up on the set right after he did a TV Guide cover with Dilbert, saying that the cover article was the best TV shows you're not watching. And one of them was B5, and Gilbert says it's something to the extent of, it's the show for thinking people, or something like that. And immediately, right after, like two episodes later or something, boom, there's Scott Adams. And the funny part, I guess you guys didn't catch it, or I didn't remember it, was that he was trying to hire Garibaldi as a detective. Mm-hmm. To try and find his little dog who's trying to overthrow the universe. And he has no idea where he is. And I'm sorry, I was personally just about pissing myself over it. Talk to you guys later. Bye.
Yeah, didn't he also mention his dog and his cat?
Yes, he said he's looking for his dog and his cat, and he has to find them before they, because they're trying to take over the universe. And yeah. That's when Garibaldi goes, and he's about to, you can tell he's about to ditch the client until the client offers him an obscene amount of money. I'm like, okay, no problem.
Yep. Dog and cat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think someone posted a comment about that on the website.
Yes, they did. I'm like, yeah, we saw it, but we wanted to talk about other stuff too. Oh, well.
Okay. We have one last voicemail.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Now this one. If you get that sense of deja vu all over again, it's because you are. So just bear with it. It's the answer to a question that I posed. So, Mike, go ahead and run that.
I can't remember the exact line, but Garibaldi, his comment is like, but you're making a drug to help telepaths. And he's like, yeah, I might be, you know, it doesn't mean I have to like them. What was the analogy? Oh, I can't remember now. Oh, well, never mind. I'm chat room or somebody and,
someone will remember for us.
Yeah, I know.
It was about lepers, was it?
What's that?
Was it lepers? No.
See, this is when you depend on voicemail.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, Gary, you send us
Gary, go ahead and call that voicemail in and let us know.
Yeah, right.
What the line was.
So, anyway.
Piece of cake. Hope he lets it through.
Hey, guys, it's Gary from Jacksonville. Per your request, the line, Tim, was, I may develop a serum to help white rats. That doesn't mean I want to employ them, even secondhand. If there's anything else this faithful minion can do, just let me know. Take care, guys. Bye.
Wow, talk about meta. I was right. He was going to send in a voicemail to respond to something he himself said on the show while he was here.
Yep. Yep.
But we did ask him to. So
we
thank
did,
you, Gary.
So- Yeah, he's just simply keeping his end of the bargain.
Oh, well.
So here we are.
And that's it.
That's it for voicemail. Now, just sort of as an advance warning, there was plenty of voicemail. So if you didn't hear your voicemail this week, wait till next week.
That's right. We've had to split up the voicemail.
Yeah.
Do we have any emails this week, or are you saving that for next week?
We do have some email, yes. So why don't we take a quick break and we'll dash through a couple of three of these.
Okay.
Hello, I'm here with my friend Carl. Oh yeah, Carl's a zombie. We're here to tell you about the Zombie Channel at www.zombiechannel.com. Yes, yes, Carl. I was just getting to that. At the Zombie Channel, you'll discover exciting zombie entertainment, zombie video, zombie audio, and zombie news and information from all around the globe. So visit the Zombie Channel at www.zombiechannel.com. Yes, Carl. I'm sure they'll bring their brains. We'll be right back.
And here we are, back to finish out Feedbackapalooza Part A.
Too much geeking for one show.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's just jump right into this, okay? You ready?
Mm-hmm.
This comes to us from Dearest Johnny, our IPX representative. Hello, Babylon podcasters. This is Johnny from Uppsala, your resident IPX employee. I'm sending this message from my little dig here out on the rim to let Tim know that I don't want to be part of his fan club anymore.
Oh, no.
That's right, Tim. I want out. All thanks to your strange and unreasonable dislike of the Minbari storyline. Not just the Civil War, which we all know was rushed and mangled, but the Lens as well. Picking on the Dreaming. What was that all about? I don't need to tell you that on Earth alone, it is quite common with similar ceremonies in a lot of societies. You can always ask the Vorlon next to you. He probably instigated a few of them. And after your deep geeking on Moments of Transition, episode 134, I must say, shame on you. That actually goes for all of you. You totally missed the really important stuff. When I thought that you finally were going to get to the point, you started talking about how heartbreaking it was when Lita had to return to the Psi-Corps. Please. The important thing in this episode is, of course, Delenn. One can even go so far as to call it the epicenter of the entire Valen, Delenn, and Minbari story arc. Here, Delenn shows her true mettle when she, as a Minbari, not quite Minbari anymore, restores the Grey Council and again unites the castes as a new Valen, bringing the circle to a close. The truly heartbreaking thing about this episode is, without doubt, Mira Furlan's passionate performance and amazing acting. If you know her backstory in the Balkans, you know that it's more than ordinary acting going on there. Again, JMS writing reflects real life in an amazing and quite painful way. Got a bit carried away there. Sorry about that. Still love the show, and I know that you will all do better the next time. All the best.
Well, it's not that we didn't want to.
Well, as I point out to Johnny, I sent him an email back. I said that, you know, even with, you know, Mira Furlan's amazing performance, she's a brunette, and Pat Tallman's a redhead, and there's really nothing more needs to be said at that point.
The thing is, it might have made more impact if we had seen more, I guess, direct results of what happened because of the shift of the balance of power in the Grey Council. I don't think it was ever even mentioned again.
No, we never see anything more about Minbari society after Moments of Transition. It is almost it's a severed thread. I don't know else how to describe it. I mean, we go back, we revisit, well, obviously Earth, throughout years 4 and 5 in some form or other.
Do we actually?
We obviously see the Centauri and the Narn, and
Do we see the Minbar at any of the cities on Minbar again before Sleeping in Light?
I'm really trying to think, and no, we don't. We don't.
Do you think any of that was the casualty of the not thinking they would have a fifth season, and then having to scramble to have a fifth season?
It makes sense. Because the focus of a lot of that is the resolution of the Earth Civil War and the creation of the New Alliance.
Yeah, but I mean, I would agree with you there, Brad. It's obviously from what's happened with the real world intruding on the beautiful universe that is Babylon 5. However, it would have really been nice to have something tossed in there. Even in year 5, with the activity with the Drock and Raiders kicking up their heels, you know, just something from Minbar saying, we're not going to get involved again, are we? Or, you know, something. I don't know. So, anyway, for what it's worth.
Horses Boy in chat says we see some of it in Legend of the Rangers.
But that's after the main series is over, though.
Yeah.
Way after. Interesting to ponder. I wonder. I just thought of something.
Yeah.
Would we have seen a Minbari trilogy along with the much coveted Telepath War books or stories if the books had done better, had sold better?
I don't know, because I would say this, that even, because I was doing some thinking about this, and this voicemail got me to pondering it, or the email rather. If given that Valen / Sinclair shows up on the scene 1,000 years ago, and we know that up to that point, Minbari society was a rather fractious affair with the castes, and one might assume even within the caste there was some infighting. Mm-hmm. Valen comes along, you know, unites them all, gives them very definite roles, and defines the castes. Here's worker, here's religious, here's warrior. And they have 1,000 years of internal peace anyways. It could be that you get another 1,000 years of internal peace because Delenn has come along and simply redefined those roles. And I can see it being, you know, so codified, because that's one of the things about the Minbari Civil War, is that those codes as laid down by Valen, they guided Minbari society. And once that guidance was gone, they didn't know what to do with themselves. So Delenn comes along, reestablishes that. I can see them sailing along on fairly sedate waters for another 1,000 years.
I would like to hear more feedback on that from our listeners, because
yeah, absolutely,
there's definitely a couple of sides that can be taken there. Any more emails?
Oh yeah, I got a couple more here. I'll try to pick up this one just for you, Summer. This comes to us from Stephanie and Bob. I just sent a donation through PayPal, but there was no place that I saw to put a comment to let you know that it's for the Vorlon field trip. I have enjoyed the podcast. I've been with you since the beginning. Well, the second podcast. I've loved each one. So
excellent. Yep, thank you very much.
Those are tracked on our end.
Yes,
you don't need to put a notation in the comments, or you don't need to make a comment. We know where it's coming from. So when you send a donation into Babylon 5, it's tagged on our end. It says it came from Babylon 5. So don't worry about any of that, folks. We keep track of it.
So am I hallucinating when, like, the PayPal, when you made those direct payments, there used to be a little text box there where you could type in a comment or a notation?
There used to be. Okay. I don't know why there's not one now.
Yeah, well. So thank you, everyone. Yes, Mike does know which ones are for the field trip. And as soon as I have something to tell you, I will tell you. So thank you.
Yep. Mark Duell had also emailed in to say that he has also donated for the excursion into Vorlon space. So thanks to Mark as well.
Excellent.
Summer, okay, you're going to rent an SUV for that, right?
I am going to rent something with excellent gas mileage along with healthy cargo space.
Well, I think you need to make sure that you take care of the life support needs, because if you remember, the last human who ventured into Vorlon space basically sat there for 8-9 days and ran out of air.
came out of the whole deal with gills.
Yeah, so you know, are you up for that?
Not the gills part, but yeah.
Okay, here we go. Next one. Hey, Babylon crew, this comes to us from Justin. Not that Justin, or is it? Hey, Babylon podcast crew, there was a question asked in show 116 about bringing your kids into sci-fi. I agree that Trek is probably the easiest choice for pulling a younger audience into the genre, and also that the themes in B5 are a bit too deep for younger viewers. I was surprised, however, when nobody mentioned the old and short-lived show Space Cases, created by sci-fi veteran Peter David and B5's very own Bill Mumy. The show involves a group of students and a pair of teachers that get stuck on an alien ship and flung far out in deep space and have to find their way home. Voyager, anyone?
Mm-hmm.
The show was geared toward kids, but occasionally put in some more mature themes. The show had several sci-fi-based guest stars, including Mark Hamill, George Takei, and, of course, Bill Mumy. It also introduced Jewel State, playing, again, a young ship's engineer. Unfortunately, the show can't be found anywhere officially. There is a put this on DVD petition going, but my hopes aren't high. So,
I remember Space Cases. I do not, matter of fact, I know I've never watched it.
I never watched it either. I do remember it hitting the airwaves, but I never gave it the time of day. So, anyway. Justin closes and says, one last thing. Since I'm a Richmond area B5 geek like Tim, I have to put in green. Although my wife's at the other computer shouting purple.
What is it about Virginia and green?
Because green's much better than purple.
Uh-huh, right. You keep thinking that.
Hey, I don't know of any superhero called Purple Lantern. Purple Arrow.
Hey, man, the Phantom wore purple, and he looked damn good in it.
Well, better than you and I would.
Hey, stunning. It's purple. Well, I'm stunning.
It's purple, you're stunning. Yes, I'm sorry. You're right.
But wouldn't Doctor Who also be sci-fi and kind of geared towards kids?
I thought Sarah Jane was more kid-like.
Well, it is, but it's still really good.
I didn't say it wasn't good.
Yeah, you're just talking about the level at which it's aimed.
Okay.
Yeah, I have older? To say, now, I wouldn't say necessarily it's a way to get kids in, but I've been impressed with Clone Wars.
The series, right?
The new series, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, it's simplistic, but I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I have the first two DVDs of the Clone Wars. I haven't sat down and caught the new series yet, but I am interested in seeing them. What else was it? What else? I'm trying to think of other shows that would have been good teaser material to lead adolescents and teens into the, I would say adolescents.
Unsuspecting waifs.
Jason of Star Command.
That's another one. I did see Space Academy was on DVD, and I checked one of those out from the library, and it was actually pretty god awful. But I do remember Jason of Star Command, which was the spinoff of that, actually being rather good for the time. I mean, that's one of those. It's hard to say because the special effects for the time, you know, were impressive, but now it's like it's pretty obviously just model making on the cheap.
Mm-hmm. So. And see, I'm just weird because I watched The Outer Limits and The Twilight Zone when I was 12 years old. And I thought it was great. Like the old black and white ones.
Yeah, right.
The one with Burgess Meredith when he's the last guy with and his glasses break. I was just sitting there. I knew that pain because I loved books.
Yeah.
I loved books and I wear glasses, so.
Yeah, so I understood. I was like, oh my goodness, that's awesomely terrible, or something like that. So I don't have to sit and think, what other shows would you use to lure bright young minds farther down the sci-fi track?
Yeah.
I have to think about that.
Okay, now one last one here.
We were kids.
This actually comes to us from our good friend Jerry in Jacksonville. Gary in Jacksonville.
Jerry.
Sorry?
It's his evil twin.
Well, actually, this is the missing section of the official chronologies of Babylon 5 that did not make it into Across Time and Space. Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Earth was devastated after the Earth-Binbari War. Besides religion, a lot of people dove into nostalgia. One of the quirkiest things to come back along with hair-paced pizza and empire building was Zima. A Mars historian that was stuck on Earth in the month following the Earth-Binbari War was doing some digging outside San Diego and ran across a beverage distribution center that had been demolished following the Great Blast of 2150. Besides finding several cases of scotch and whiskey now aged 120-plus years, there were several shrink-wrapped pallets of Zima, which were present from the 2147 revival of malt beverages when it was reintroduced as the latest diet fad. This forward-thinking archaeologist, Chuck E., turned a small discovery into a world-spanning beverage industry duplicating his found alcoholic products, including Zima, and signing exclusive alcohol contracts with Earth Force for Mars, Earth, and Io. He continued to expand his business, Edgar's Industries, moving into juices and eventually pharmaceuticals. For years, even after relations with other civilizations became common throughout the Interstellar Alliance, Zima remained a standard wellness drink in the Earth Alliance facilities through 2282 until it lost the popularity contest due to new liquid spoo drinks.
That just sounds nasty.
That's
so there
funny.
We go.
That's funny. Well, I don't know. Would that area of San Diego still be radioactive?
That's what gave it the kick.
Uh-huh. Oh, no. You know what I just realized?
What's that?
If San Diego was destroyed, that means the Stone Brewery was destroyed unless they branched out. Oh, no. No more Stone? Oh, no.
You see?
That's heartbreaking. I don't even want to think about that as a joke. Oh.
You see, we have to get off the planet and take our alcohol with us.
Oh, that's it. We have to save the Stone Brewery. We need to put a Stone Brewery on the moon just to preserve that awesome goodness.
Maybe SOS. Mike can set aside a parcel of his real estate there.
SOS, save our stone.
That's silly. Okay, you have any more for today, or?
That's it. But again, like with the voicemails, we got plenty in. So if you didn't hear it this week, tune in next week.
Next week, yes.
Yeah.
All righty then. Thank you. Thank you, Brad, for helping us dissect our listener feedback.
It was fun.
Yeah. And once again, if you want to participate in this multi-tracked discussion, you can always go join the forums over at Farpoint Forums. Just go over there and look for the Babylon Podcast Forum. Leave comments on the various articles on BabylonPodcast.com. Send us an email at BabylonPodcast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
Year the Zima is rediscovered.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the zombie malt beverage.